engines don't have to be replaced every 4 to 6 months. Perfect for anyone on a tight budget, and more importantly, if there's an unexpected emergency, your loved ones will be prepared. That's because Berkey systems are able to purify raw, untreated water. Check out our Christmas specials at BerkeyWater.com. With one of our quantity specials, you not only get a discount, but in one...
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be, right now, my views, and for the next hour, the views of Mr. P.T. Holdcroft, and he's coming to us from Great Britain, where he, of course, is as a curator of a museum, and actually he has written a fascinating book, A Medieval Mystery at the Crossroads. A Medieval Mystery at the Crossroads. It's a story about a cave at a place called Royston at the crossroads there, where a certain ancient crossroads
thing, which answered most of the questions that people asked me when I was conducting them round the cave.
But of course, it sounds like this place is just pregnant with mystery, and there are secrets there to be found, and we'll be back in just a moment with Peter Holdcroft.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Peter Holdcroft, and as you can tell from his accent, he comes from Great Britain. He actually works in a cave. He's a cave guide. He's a cave researcher. He's written a book called A Medieval Mystery at the Crossroads. And basically it's the story of a cave that was found. It was found in 1742, but it dated back many centuries before that. It had been actually concealed, it had been partly filled in, because obviously somebody didn't want people to know the truth. It had served a purpose at some time in the ancient past. And of course, this actually ties into the Templars and the Masons, and most people sort of shrug and say, well, I mean, why should I be concerned? Well, you should be concerned because, of course, there is a powerful Masonic influence here in the United States, and the Masons were an outgrowth of the Templars. They may deny it, but they certainly were, and the Scottish Rite Mason here in the United States, they actually have a degree for the Knights of the Temple, just as they have a degree for the Rosicrucians. And modern-day Masonry is the modern-day manifestation of these ancient secret societies, among which were the Templars. And, of course, the cave is pregnant with a symbolism of the Knights Templar, which most Americans don't know anything or much about because they're not supposed to, and there's been a great deal of effort to conceal the truth. And, of course, this book really takes you into the Templars and, of course, what Mr. Holdcroft has actually found out about them. So you actually have been at this since 1986, and there at the crossroads, perhaps you could explain to our listeners what the crossroads is and why that is so important.
Well, I should explain where Royston is. This is quite important, actually. It connects with the story. It's about 40 miles from the centre of London to the north of London, and it was originally a small market town. Well, it's still a small town, and it's at the junction of two very ancient roads, the Icknield Way and Ermine Street. And the cave, which is a man-made thing, it's been hollowed out by hand, is almost on the original junction of the crossroads. Now,
I'm going to ask you to hold that for just a minute. We want to bring all of our stations back together, and I want them to hear what you have to say about the crossroads. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, our guest is Mr. Holdcroft from Great Britain, and he, of course, right now is the curator of the cave at Royston. And, of course, this is at the crossroads, ancient crossroads. At a time, the Romans lived there, and before that, there were other tribes that lived there. But this goes back literally several, almost 2,000 years to the time of the Roman occupation of Great Britain. But, of course, we don't know when the cave was built. Apparently somewhere 13th to 14th century, somewhere in that time. But they had to do with the secret Templar movement, which had, of course, its roots in the Holy Land, and, of course, with the mysteries that were present on Temple Mount. And, of course, this is manifest today, a fascinating story, because you can't understand anything going on in America. You can't understand why the people in Washington, D.C. have created this terrible economic mess that is going to eventually destroy the financial structure of this nation. Why would anybody want to do that? Because they're carrying out, I believe, the directives that can be traced back to the time of the Knights Templar and the time of the Rosicrucians and the time, certainly, of the Kabbalah. But I'm going to let Mr. Holdcroft talk about it. He's written a fascinating book. So basically, you pick up the story right there, because people have to understand this is not something ancient history. This has an application for what's going on today, and unless people understand the ancient mysteries, the ancient secret societies, the ancient mystery religions, they really can't understand so much of what's taking place today, and they're not supposed to. But I want you to help educate them.
Right. Well, I may carry on.
You go right ahead. That's why we're calling it.
It is shaped very much like a squat bottle. The lower 10 feet is decorated with carvings cut into the soft chalk, which have a distinctly Templar appearance. In fact, it's been believed for some time that the cave was the work of the Knights Templar. And then you have to assume that it was created in the early years of the 14th century when Templars were being persecuted throughout Europe, and many of them were suffering from being burnt at the stake for heresy.
And, of course, basically the Templar then were disbanded in 1307, in fact. Most people have never even stopped and wondered why Friday the 13th is supposed to be a bad symbol, bad time, unlucky. Well, that was the day that, of course, Jacques de Molay was arrested, and he was the head of the Knights Templar at that time. Here in America today, we have literally hundreds of de Molay societies, and, of course, one of the leading de Molays is a man named William Jefferson Clinton, one of the highest-ranking de Molays in America. People do not understand how it all ties together, but we're talking about the early part of the 14th century. That would be in the early 1300s. So you go right ahead, sir.
Yes. At that time, the objective of the Templars was to find ways of recognizing a genuine Templar, and so we have a connection with Freemasonry and its grips and hand signals and so on. In fact, I realized fairly early on that there was a distinct Masonic connection to the cave in Royston, but not being a Freemason myself, I was a bit diffident about pursuing this, but eventually I had to, and it proved to be very rewarding. Let me explain that the cave was discovered in 1742 underneath Royston's butter market, where it had been concealed for a time that we don't know. Quite a long time, I would say.
Certainly a matter of several hundred years.
Well, maybe. All right. Maybe. But, you see, the carvings also have a strong Masonic connection. And when I looked at what the carvings were telling us about Freemasonry, it seemed to me that they were much more, what they were saying was much more modern than the early 14th century. And so I got quite interested in Freemasonry after all. And I have been called upon to address a Knights Templar lodge in the north of England only quite recently. When the Templar persecution began in 1307, it's widely believed that some Templars escaped to Scotland, which was then beyond the jurisdiction of the Pope, because the King of Scotland had been excommunicated. Anyway, there's a belief that the Kings of Scotland and the Templars developed Freemasonry. And in 1583, King James VI of Scotland, who became our James I, took a great interest in Freemasonry, and he appointed somebody called William Shaw to give Freemasonry a formal structure. And this he did. And the king, James VI of Scotland, was initiated as a Freemason in 1601. And then, in 1603, James VI of Scotland became James I of England. So he was the first king to rule both Scotland and England, as well as being the first king who was a Freemason. Now, on his way to Westminster from Edinburgh, the king had to pass through Royston, and it is said that he enjoyed some hunting on the nearby heath, and he returned subsequently to buy property in the town, and he set up a hunting lodge, and he had premises for his family in Royston town. So we're quite historic in that point of view. Now, he obviously wanted to continue his work on developing Freemasonry, but he didn't have a suitable venue in which to conduct the ceremony. And he couldn't do much in London because he was surrounded by prying eyes. So this made me think, and I suggest that he then remembered Royston as a place that was within easy reach of London. And I think he commissioned a brother Mason to create in Royston a meeting place suitable for his purposes. And as a result, the Royston Cave, which was originally an underground shrine associated with the crossroads, was converted to a copy of a place that both the king and the brother Mason knew in Scotland. And because there was a strong Templar historical connection, this was reproduced in the Royston Cave.
And, of course, there are all of these emblems of course carved into the wall there that sort of depict the Templar story.
Yes, you can make a very good Templar story, but then when you realize that some of the carvings are referring to things that are Masonic, you find that the Masonic connection is much more recent. In fact, the connections to Freemasonry appear to date from a time when speculative masonry, that is not the real serious sort of chipping away at stone, was being actively developed in an atmosphere of increasing national freedom, and not 300 years earlier, in the early 14th century, when the concern was to create a basic form of Freemasonry with signs for mutual recognition and the protection of persecuted Templars.
So then it's your view then that the Temple probably was developed then during the reign of James IV and about the early 1600s.
Yes. So I believe that the cave dates from the time of James I.
All right, well, it's fascinating. Certainly, there's all sorts of symbolism here. And, of course, the Templars, of course, they actually were housed on the Temple Mount for the better part of, almost 100 years there. And, of course, it was there, of course, that many people felt that they had found some of the secret mysteries. And, of course, tying into the Kabbalah, which was the codification of really the mystery religions that was carried out by the Jewish scholars 600 years before Christ was born. Kabbalah, of course, then became the basis upon which the mystery religions have increased since that time, modern-day Gnosticism, and carried out and right to today. Well, you go right ahead and pick up the story.
Yes. Well, I am pretty sure that some of the carvings that you look at are much more recent. For example, we have a carving showing somebody being burnt at the stake. And it obviously must be somebody of great importance because there's an enormous niche underneath where they quite clearly burnt candles in honor of this man. So I suspect he was Jacques de Molay, the last Templar Grand Master. But behind him on the memorial are 32 figures. Now, you will probably know that 32 is a significant number to members of the Scottish Rite. And there is, in fact, a degree, a 32nd degree of the Scottish Rite, that refers to the death of Jacques de Molay, and that appears to confirm what we believe about this panel being something to do with Jacques de Molay. And then we have another panel which shows hands and hearts. Now, a lot of people have said, well, hands and hearts appear in many Templar places. But in the Royston cave, the heart appears in the hand. And so this is something quite unusual and unique to the Royston cave. And when I've questioned Freemasons about this, they say, oh, there's no secret about this. The heart in the hand stands for charity, which, of course, as you know, is a great thing with Freemasons. And there is also on the wall a figure holding his left hand or left wrist, from which the left hand has been severed. he's had his left hand chopped off. And Freemasons know that this man is a Mark Mason. And we also know that the Mark Mason degree was created round about the time when James became initiated in Freemasonry in Scotland. So it all seems to add up. I must say I have great difficulty with my friends in Royston. They want to have a Templar cave. They're not so happy to have a cave, even if it was created by James the First.
Well, that doesn't detract from it, because Masonry really does identify with...
This
is Dr. Stan here, and of course, Mr. Holcroft was saying that, of course, when he talks to the people there in Royston where the cave is, they want it to be a Templar cave, and of course, he really feels that it was really a Masonic cave, but as I was pointing out, of course, that the Masons really trace their origin to the Templars, and you read the writings of modern-day, of course, experts on Masonry, like Albert Pike, his book in 1891, Morals and Dogma. He tells you that the roots of modern-day Masonry were in the Knights Templar.
Yes, I think that's... I would agree with that.
So the question was, what was this cave used for? Why was it there? It was an awful job to dig that out and to make all the carvings. You have a very, very narrow entrance. People apparently came down from the top, and there was a little narrow entrance about 2 feet wide.
Oh, yes.
You had to go up and down with the little places to get your toes. It'll be awfully difficult to get in and out that way.
Yes, it was definitely a secret place. But, of course, Freemasonry was secret until 1717, when it declared itself openly. And that's when there was a great surge in membership. But I think that development of the degrees was going on long before this.
Although this is not obviously talked about, but I think you're absolutely right. I think there's been a continuity of these secret societies down through the ages, certainly even long antedating the Knights Templar there on Temple Mount in the 1200s. And the 1100s, for that matter. I think they were organized, what, about 1118? Is what you had in your book.
1118.
Well, that was for the founding of the Templars, somewhere in that area.
Yes.
Well, anyway, of course, then, you think that this was then a meeting place, the Royston Cave is a meeting place for the Knights Templar. And, of course, it would be a date there from the time of James the First of Scotland or James the Fourth of Great Britain.
Yes, that's right.
Is there any way to actually be... to date it any better than that? And then why...
Well, all we can do is to examine the carvings. There's no material in the cave that we can carbon date or anything like that. So we're entirely dependent on the message from the carvings. And that's why I think this connection with Freemasonry is so important, because if it was James the First, we can date the cave pretty firmly to 1603 or 1604, shortly after he became King of England.
Somebody just called in and asked if this was the same King James as for the King James Bible, and it was.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, King James Bible was published in 1604, so...
Yes.
So this is the same King James, and of course he succeeded Elizabeth. Elizabeth I, I believe, was the queen before that, wasn't it?
Yes.
And so basically, so much of what's going on dates back to the Elizabethan times, and of course at that time the Rosicrucians were one of the major secret societies in Great Britain, and of course out of that came Sir Francis Bacon, who sent his followers to the United States to begin to take over this great new nation to create the new Atlantis. And so they've always wanted to use the military and financial power of the United States to bring about this world government. And that's really what's going on behind the scenes today. Well, Sydney, as you analyze all of the carvings there, you mention in your book that some of the carvings were heretical. In other words, there was a tremendous antagonism towards at least the Catholic Church. Would that be correct?
Some of the carvings were removed before they abandoned the cave and filled it with earth. Presumably because they contained something that was highly heretical. But there's also showing in the cave now what I believe to be the idea behind Dan Brown's book that Jesus was married to the Magdalene and that they had a daughter called Sarah. That's on the wall in the cave.
It really is. Of course, then this fits into this heretical belief, which, of course, has always been there in an effort to destroy the fundamentals of Christianity. And this was some of the things that actually many of the Masons would actually push. And, of course, there's always been this battle since the inception of civilization, or certainly the inception of Christianity, the efforts to destroy a belief in the God of the Bible. And so, obviously, this influence was there even at that time, even at the time of James the Fourth. But then, of course, the Rosicrucians were intimately involved in that movement, then, just as they are today.
Yeah. Well,
Hold that thought. Hold that thought, please.
Right. You of course have had a copy of my book. So
go right ahead. Our guest is Mr. Peter Holdcraft, and we're talking about his book, Medieval Mystery at the Crossroads. And yes, I have a copy of the book. I've enjoyed reading it. Thank you very much for getting it off to me.
Yes. I should give you the latest website for the History Society, where you can find more information on this.
Let's wait about 3 minutes when we have all of our stations back on board. So
we'll
put that out in just about 2 minutes, because I do want you to get your website out there. And I think it's important that people understand this is just one more little point in this whole confusing puzzle that's out there. How do we begin to tie all of these things together? And certainly I think this is so difficult for people who've never studied history, and most of this history is very, very hard to uncover, isn't it?
Oh, it is indeed. Yes.
Well, would you like to talk a little bit, discuss a little bit about the how you have uncovered this, and so much about the Templars, because your book does deal a great deal with the Templars, and not only their influence there in the Holy Land, but their influence in Great Britain as they begin to lead the peasant revolion in 1381?
Yes, that's right.
Most people here have never heard of the peasant revolution. What was that all about?
There is an American historian that explored this thoroughly, and that's James Robinson, who explains the connection between the Templars and the Peasants' Revolt, how it was an opportunity for settling old scores. They didn't get very far, of course, largely because the king, although he was quite young, was exceedingly devious in dealing with the rebels.
But of course, the Templars were in a conscious effort then to overthrow the existing social structure. Was that it?
Well, the Templars, I think, according to John Robinson, of course, the Templar property
Hold that thought for just a moment, please, as we bring our... Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Peter Holdcroft. We're talking about his book, A Medieval Mystery at the Crossroads. Of course, Mr. Holdcroft is comes from Great Britain. He is the curator of the caves at Royston. And, of course, it's a fascinating story. You know, that there's this mysterious cave. He dates it back at least to the time of James I, who was involved with masonry. And, of course, masonry was an outgrowth of the Rosicrucians, of the Templars, of all of the mystery religions, because they all tie in together. And they date back then to the Gnostics and the Kabbalah, and then, of course, to the mystery religions of ancient Egypt and of the Assyrians and, of course, as the Babylonians. But before we go on, would you like to go ahead and get out your website? You mentioned earlier you did have a website where people could go and learn more about this.
It's www.roystonlocalhistory.org.uk.
So give that one more time, please.
www.roystonlocalhistory, and that's all lowercase letters, roystonlocalhistory.org, O-R-G, UK. And people would be able to order a book through that website.
All right. Well, now, basically, of course, you said that there was simply indication in the carvings of the cave that was, of course, to perpetuate or try to elucidate this heresy that was carried out by the Priory of Sion, and, of course, picked up by Dad Brown, that, of course, Jesus had married Mary Magdalene.
Yes.
And, of course, that he had not died to the crucifixion. If this were true, then all of Christianity is a lie. And, of course, this has been perpetrated behind the scenes for a long period of time. I believe it is a heresy. I believe it's totally untrue. But obviously there are many people within the secret societies, and I'm speaking now of the Templars and their modern-day manifestations and the Rosicrucians, and we have the Rosicrucian Temple just across the hill from where I live.
Yes.
And then in modern-day masonry, because they're not going to tell people, of course, the god that they worship, because, of course, that would be terribly, terribly controversial. But there really are other gods out there, and there really are millions of people that worship them. In fact, I think those of you who listen to my programs regularly recall that a couple of weeks ago when I was at the conspiracy conference in Santa Clara, some young man came up during the panel and suggested I was worshiping the wrong god. I ought to be worshiping his god, and I thanked him so very much for bringing that out. And I said, that's just what I've been trying to get people to realize, that there really are people who do worship another god. And, of course, that's what it's all about, and that's why they try so hard to discredit Christianity. Well, how did they do that in the carvings? What was there that suggested, of course, that the traditional Christian belief was heretical?
Well, you've got the three figures, obviously father, mother, and daughter, and originally, the mother had a left arm that connected to the right arm of the man. And I've seen this happen on numerous occasions, as indeed you must have done, when you go to a play or some drama, and at the end, the leading man takes the leading lady's hand and he leads her forward to take a bow. He presents her to the audience, and she takes a bow. In this case, on the wall of the cave, there's also the child, and the woman has her arm around the child, and it's you could imagine her saying, "Come along, dear, you are in this as well." And then underneath these three figures, there are some pagan signs. And these include an earth goddess. And there is a link between the earth goddess and the child in the first group, because there's a hole in the wall underneath each of these, which was for a candle for illumination. So they were illuminating the child in the family group and the earth goddess in the pagan group. And that, to me, said, long live the bloodline of Jesus. I don't know if there's any other explanation possible.
But, of course, the thing is that from the traditional Christian point of view, why, if there was a bloodline of Jesus, then the message of Jesus' death, resurrection, certainly is not true. And so this has really been promulgated behind the scenes for a long period of time by those who would destroy Christianity replace it with another religion. Well, when you, of course, take people into the cave, and I know you do regular guided tours, as you explain all of these things to them?
Yes, I do. I also explain that Freemasonry doesn't acknowledge particular religions. As long as you believe in a supreme being, you can be a Mason. And I rather admire that point of view. I think it means that you have access then to all the other civilizations.
Well, of course, we would probably disagree on that. We having had the opportunity to read the writings of the Masons like Manly P. Hall, who tells you that it's not, of course, that they want all, of course, religions. It is that they worship a different god. They worship a very specific god, but a very different one. And you'll find that in the writings of Manly P. Hall, who, when he died, was touted by the Scottish Rite magazine as the greatest Masonic philosopher of all time. If you read him, you find out what god they do worship. But anyway, of course, this has nothing to do with the fascinating story that you've uncovered as far as the Royston Cave. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you're out there in the listening audience, and of course you'd like to give us a call, you have a question for our guest on his book, A Medieval Mystery at the Crossroads. And certainly, are many, many people coming to the cave today?
Well, yes. It's only small, you see. It's about 17 feet diameter. The part that you actually enter, and so you can't get many people on one occasion down there, but we still manage to get about 2,000 visitors a year.
I think it's very interesting that they don't have to come down through this hidden passage. Would you like to tell them a little bit about the tunnel that leads into the cave and how that came about?
Well, yes, this was created by the man who owned a house across the road from the butter market. And he had been noticing well-to-do people coming to look at the carvings underneath the butter market. And he decided that as he got a very hard winter, and he was a builder, incidentally, that he had a very hard winter ahead of him, and he had no work for his men, so he set them to work cutting this tunnel from the back of his living room to the cave. Now, he did a very good job because he realized that he couldn't guarantee hitting the cave in the precise position he wanted if he just started the tunnel from the house end. So he began the tunnel from the cave and went in about 4 or 5 meters, and then he joined the end of that tunnel with a tunnel coming from the house. And it's that tunnel that we use today for visitors.
And so you don't have to crawl down to this little space, you know, and to go up and down using your finger holes and toes.
It used to be that it was just a chalk floor, and when it got slightly wet, it became very dangerous. So we've now put a non-slip flooring in, and we've got railings on both sides for infirm people to hang on to.
Well, of course, basically we have Larry calling from Louisiana, and if you're out there across America, you have a question, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But this is simply another one of the little dots out there that is so difficult to put together. I mean, how do you understand Masonry? How do you understand the Rosicrucians who are here in America today? How do you understand the Theosophy movement, which is, of course, an outgrowth of Masonry here in the United States, or the Lucis Trust, or simply the Templars? Go into Scotland, you'll see all the Templar graves there. Supposedly the Templars were eliminated back in the 1300s, but obviously they escaped to continue, promulgating the ideas that they promulgated that led, of course, to the execution of Jacques de Molay in the early 1300s. Well, hi, Larry, do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I got a couple quick questions. Can you hear me okay?
You're doing fine. Ghost, what's the question?
Okay. One is the Tetragrammaton of the Hebrews written anywhere in the cave? Wait a minute.
One question at a time. Repeat the question one more time.
Is the Tetragrammaton of the Hebrews written anywhere in the caves?
You're speaking of the six-sided star or what?
No, I'm talking about the YHWH.
Well, do you find that any place in the cave there?
Well, there is a Hebrew sign on the figure of St. Christopher. All the other saintly figures have crosses, but he has a tau on his chest. And I'm not sure what this means.
All right, fine. And don't they have St. George? Is he there, the one who slew the dragon?
Well, yes, we show visitors this man with his sword pointing to a line of 13 figures. And we say he's St. George because we know that Richard I put the Crusader army under this protection of George. But I have to admit that you could quite easily say that this figure is St. Michael.
All right, fine.
Not much difference between the two, actually.
All right, Larry, do you have another question?
Okay, real quick. The kings of England have been coronated on Jacob's pillar stone for a long time. Is that believed that they're the lineage of Sarah? Is that why they're coronated on Jacob's pillar stone? Is that in the cave?
He's saying that the kings of England were ordinarily coronated on Jacob's pillow stone. There's a stone there, and I believe it's a stone that they find beneath the throne of England. And it's supposedly a tie-in between what went on in Great Britain and, of course, what had happened, in ancient Israel. Is there any reference to a large stone there that has some historic significance?
I don't think so. The only reference to a stone is the one that Richard I appears to be touching, and that stone has the image of a hunting hawk on it.
All right.
And do you believe that the Queen of England is related to Sarah directly today?
What's that?
Does he believe that the Queen of England today is directly related to Sarah, the daughter of Jesus that he stated?
All right, fine. Thank you so much. And what are your thoughts on that?
Basically, of course,
the Queen of England then would be related to the daughter of Jesus Christ.
I wouldn't like to comment on that. I, That's something I haven't thought of.
All right, fine. And of course, these are all of these heretical ideas, of course, that Jesus was never crucified, that he married Mary Magdalene. And this is the heresy, of course, that was perpetuated by the books on the Priory of Sion, and of course then were put forward in Dan Brown's books, which of course sold very, very well, and the reason they sold is because there really is an attack on Christianity today. It involves our entire publishing industry. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is P.T. Holdcroft. His book, A Medieval Mystery at the Crossroads. And certainly, as you wrote your book, you had done a great deal of research into the ancient Templars. What were they looking for? They certainly were not there simply to guide the pilgrims going to the Holy Land. They were there for another purpose. Did you have that impression?
Well, I've often wondered about this, yes. I think they were probably sent there to do a job.
But what was the job, and that is the question.
Yes, yeah.
Do you have any idea about your reading?
That the Christians hadn't been able to lay their hands on for 1,000 years.
And what was that? Do we have any idea?
No, I have no idea.
All right, but so there's an aura of mystery surrounding the Templars, and of course, who they were, why they were in the Holy Land. Of course, when the Muslims defeated the Christians, the Christians, the warriors, the Crusaders had to leave the Holy Land, then the Templars returned to Europe, and they became the first central bankers, the father of the modern-day central bankers, but they became the first, I should say, international bankers, and of course they dominated the finances of Europe for the better part of 100 years. And of course they, because usury was not allowed, of course they would take property in return for money. They had simply almost unlimited amounts of gold, which they accumulated, and nobody knew quite how. It is suggested that when they actually were dispersed, that many of them went to Switzerland and set up Swiss banking. Why Swiss banking is as one of these cornerstones of modern-day banking today. So there's a lot there that already, of course, brings us to an understanding of what's going on today. You need to get back to the time of the Templars. Was there anything unusual you uncovered when you began to study the Templars?
No, I don't think so. I would have put it in the book if I'd found anything. But what Dan Brown said was not different from what the previous authors have said in 1982.
You're speaking now of the other books that were written on the Prior of Sion.
Yes,
we'll be back here in just a moment here to wrap up today's program. Well, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program for us, Mr. Holdcroft. So what message would you like to leave for the listeners out across America?
Well, I would like to get more acceptance of the idea that James the First was the man who developed Freemasonry, and that he... this was something that he did in his fairly short reign of 20-odd years.
Well, do you think, of course, that...
He got Freemasonry established, and, of course, once it had been picked up by the British Army, it went to all parts of the Empire. So, I am quite sure that the role of James has not been properly assessed.
What do you think, of course, that the masonry that James established was really a continuation of the Templar movement and of the Rosicrucian movement as well? because these were two secret societies, the Templars in the 1200s, the Rosicrucians in the 1400s. Was there anything in the carvings that brought in the Rosicrucian influence on modern-day masonry?
I don't think there's any connection to the Rosicrucians. I'm not an expert on this, but I haven't noticed anything in particular.
Well, if you were reading, of course, Albert Pike, who is the father of modern-day American masonry, he definitely ties modern-day masonry not only to the Templars and the Gnostics, but also into the Rosicrucians and into the Illuminati, for that matter. He says that it is simply a modern-day manifestation of all of these organizations that had their roots, of course, in the ancient writings. Well, anyway, it's been fascinating. I really appreciate the work you've done. Thank you so very much for being with us. And again, the book is A Medieval Mystery at the Crossroads. Would you like to get out your website just one more time?
Well, it's www.RoystonLocalHistory.org.
All right, that's Royston.
And I hope you get some joy if you try using that.
All right, God bless, and thank you so very much for being with us. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Mr. Holcroft, and of course his book is fascinating because, of course, most people really don't understand the continuity of what there's been from the ancient mystery religions through the Magi, through the Kabbalah, through the Gnostics, through the Knights Templar, the Rosicrucians, the Illuminati, and then up to modern-day masonry. And of course, there are millions of Masons here who worship a different God. It's not that they worship any God. They worship a very specific God. They worship the great architect of the universe. And if you don't know who that is, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because we simply quote from what they say. And of course, we actually tell you what they say about the Templars. What Mandy P. Hall, who was a mentor for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, what Mandy P. Hall said about, of course, how all of these things fit together, and of course, who the real God is. And of course, all of this is an effort to destroy the belief in Christianity. There is a conspiracy against God. That's why the Masonic judges on the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of the schools. And the Masons, at the time when God was taken out of our schools, controlled the Supreme Court in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. And nobody will tell the American people, because they really don't want them to understand the implications of what's going on today. Whether there's a conscious effort to destroy Christianity today. Christianity has been infiltrated. Our seminars have been infiltrated. They've changed the music of our churches. You remember the wonderful old hymns and the wonderful old organs, but they've taken the organs out and they've brought in the drums. And many times our church services sound like a rock concert, and people shake their heads and say, how did it happen? It happened because it was supposed to happen at this time in history. First, we're told in the book of Thessalonians in 3:2, there will be a great falling away before the man of sin is exposed. And of course, they're talking about the Antichrist. There is a spiritual battle going on today. If you've not yet seen the DVDs we offer, The Final Countdown by Pastor Billy Crone, 10 DVDs that really lay this whole story out, and how you could look and see what's happening culturally and ideologically and politically, and then what's happening prophetically. The Final Countdown, we think, does an excellent job. You can get part one with 5 DVDs and then part two with 5 DVDs, or get them both together. To really understand what's going on, if you prefer the CDs or you'd like to have them as well, we have at least the first one. It's called Countdown to Armageddon. That's Countdown to Armageddon. These things are available by calling Radio Liberty at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And of course, there are all of these occult monuments and areas and regions all throughout the world. And of course, the But all you need to really do is look at the back of the dollar bill. Why is there a pyramid there? Oh, some of our Christians say, oh, that is simply a sign of Christianity. No, it's not a sign of Christianity. The pyramid capped by the all-seeing eye is the sign of the ancient and mystery religion. So why is it on the back of the dollar bill? That's why you need to get our trilogy. There are three DVDs. You can get them separately or all together at a special price. But get them separately if you'd like. Certainly the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, which goes back to James IV. It goes back to the Elizabethan era and to Francis Bacon. And the secret societies that existed at that time, specifically the Rosicrucians, that sent a contingent to the United States about 1640 to take over our nation. And today, almost three centuries later, why, of course, they are in total working control here in Washington, D.C., under a different name. Today, they're called the Trilateral Commission. You need the Secret Mysteries Trilogy, but you really need to understand who runs Washington, D.C. You need to get Pat Wood's excellent DVD. It's entitled The Trilateral Commission, and of course goes into how they created the current financial crisis. Why did they do that? Because they want to collapse our society. Now they control the rest of the world. They want to usher in the new world government, the new world leader.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU Band, frequency 11836.